From the land to Grand Teutoburg City in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of June, 2026. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net. Ben Brown from the University of Missouri will join us to put last week's World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates in fundamental perspective. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mark Russo from Everstream Analytics will join us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org, where we have about 15 days left to put another $300,000 into our bank accounts. Remember, we only use what's actually there, and our goal is about $300,000 short. If you can help out by making a donation today, that would be great. You can do that at willgive.org. That's willgive.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at $4.15.5. That was up 2.75 cents. September 2 higher at $4.22.75. And December corn a penny and a half higher at $4.41.75. July soybeans for Monday at $11.19.25, 5.75 higher. November new crop at $11.34.75, up 2.75 cents. Bean meal futures 70 cents higher. The bean oil up 9 cents for the day. Wheat futures up 5.25 cents in the July, the harvest month there. For the soft red at $5.89.75, the hard red July at $6.40 even, up 5.5 cents per bushel. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $2.43.25, $2.07.5 higher. Feeders at $3.61.55, up $4.12.5, and lean hogs for 100 pounds. Down 57.5 cents on their settlement price at $95.77.5, again for 100 pounds. Crude oil around $80 a barrel at $4.25 lower, and the crude oil for the Brent, $83.23, down $4.10. At first, of course, the West Texas or WTI gasoline on the RBOB, the wholesale price today at $2.88.1 per gallon, down 10.4 cents. Here to talk about these numbers is Kurt Kimmel. He is with agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. Hi, thanks for being with us, Kurt. Hope you're having a good day.
Yeah, it's an exciting day, actually, seeing some stabilization in the marketplace. Grain market's taken a beating here over the last few weeks. And, boy, walking in here this morning and seeing things defensive and coming back, closing unchanged a little higher, it kind of makes it a good day. Plus, you know, a lot of rain around, maybe too much in some spots.
Yeah, well, thinking of that, the crop reports are due out this afternoon. I suppose they'll probably show something pretty good. You can get to those in a moment if you want. If not, I do want to know what you think about the settlement of the Iran war and what impact that might have on old crop, and then if you have thoughts as it's related to fertilizer and the new crop too. But begin with the old crop and what the Iran war settlement might mean to it, if anything.
Well, it's just going to, well, if it holds, we'll see the transportation open up and risk off on insurance for transportation. So it's going to create more world movement. As far as grain demand goes, I think it's kind of in a situation where it opens up transportation is positive. The thing on the energy side, as long as the energy continues to come down, it won't come down as fast as it went up. It's going to make some cheaper transportation also. So there's several factors there, but I think the grain market kind of went to the sidelines on this Iranian situation. It's had a market of its own here over the last month. It's virtually straight down. So overall, I think the biggest impact is investor confidence and consumer confidence. It's going to be a huge move. The Dow up sharply today. S&P's up sharply today. We'll see some easing of gas prices to make the consumer happy, and prices should come down. So I think a little bit longer term is constructive to agricultural food demand, Todd.
When you look forward into the end of the month, the acreage report is looming. USDA probably has collected most of the surveys on that. Certainly the surveys for the grain stocks numbers, both of those are due out June 30. Expectations at this point for anything to really change with them, and I suppose I'm mostly thinking about acreage and what soybeans might look like.
Well, that's a good question. We'll see what they come in at. I really haven't seen a whole lot. There might be just a tad few more bean acres and a tad fewer or less corn acres, but whatever it is, 1 million acres here, 1 million acres there, if you take that times the yield, it's not a big mover. Now, you move the yield up and down, that's going to be more of a factor in here as we move forward here, what type of yield put on it. That's going to be the main focus here as we move forward. But grain stocks, I think corn stocks is going to be a little tighter. Corn demand has just been huge in through here. Is it going to create a bullish situation? Probably not, because any type of up and through here, I think producers are going to be willing to make some additional sales, because it's gone down quite a bit. And with the rain around, they're going to be more comfortable getting caught up. In fact, quite a few guys have been moving some grain here. It's been too wet to do anything here, so they've been in the trucks moving. This afternoon's crop conditions report, we're looking at the good to excellent carry on corn as the nation being 68% good to excellent versus 67% last week. The soybean 66% good to excellent versus 65% last week. So an improvement of about 1%. Wheat harvest, expect to be about 19%. Last year it was 10%. Last week was 11%. So wheat harvest got a little bit of an early start. But man, we're still hearing wheat yields coming in below expectations there, Todd.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate you taking time with me for the day.
You bet. Take care.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org, where if you scroll down the page, you'll find both an article as well as a calendar event focused on the Dudley Smith Farm Field Day. That takes place Wednesday outside of Pena, Illinois. You can drop by for some really interesting functions. All the details are online right now at WILLAG.org. Ben Brown, agricultural economist with Missouri Extension and FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, now joins us. Hey, Ben, thanks for being with us. We have quite a little bit to cover. I want to do the fundamentals of the marketplace today. Let's begin with last week's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. The monthlies generally don't do a lot of changes. This one on the global side did add to supply in many cases. Can you talk to me about what you saw within that program?
Sure, yeah, and you're right. The June report wasn't a huge market mover when it comes to the corn, soybeans, and wheat. Oftentimes people ask, well, why do we have these reports in early June? And the answer is the WASD report incorporates a whole bunch of other commodities and livestock products. And so this time of year, you know, we might see some changes in other commodities, but, you know, we're not far enough in our U.S. growing season to expect, you know, major changes to U.S. production. We're kind of at the, you know, the tail end here of South American production, so we tend to not see many changes there. However, we did see some changes, and I think that was the primary outcome as it relates to corn, soybeans, and wheat. I'll start really quick and talk about some of the big changes I saw in those global numbers. You know, the U.S. Department of Ag found 14 million metric tons more corn in the global market, and that is significant. That was something that the you know, the trade ahead of the report wasn't anticipating. You know, that headline number alone is bearish to the corn market. However, when you start to dive into that, a big chunk of those changes came from Indian corn production and corn ending stocks. And India is not a major trader, both imports or exporters of corn. They've had a relatively, you know, strong and growing ethanol program, mostly for industrial use. And so the expectation is that this could really help feed into that, but it's not necessarily expected to change a whole lot for the global, I guess, trade balance, if you will. USDA did tip their hand a little bit and recognize the strong corn exports and commitments we have for the current marketing year, as well as setting up for next marketing year. Some of that bullish shine was taken off as a result of this 14 million metric tons of additional global production. But I think the corn export picture remains very strong. They did make a reduction to corn ethanol numbers here in the U.S. And corn used for ethanol. But I don't think that's anything to be concerning. Those expectations were high to begin with. And we're just seeing, you know, I think technology and the efficiency of converting corn to ethanol really kind of take place. And so I'm not concerned by the numbers by any means. It's, again, it's a strong corn balance sheet. So that was on the corn side. I'll talk a little bit about wheat and stay with the feed grains here. The wheat numbers here in the U.S., the supply tightened on the poor quality of wheat that we see in the southern plains and that hard red winter wheat category. However, again, very strong global production that is kind of just overshadowing maybe some of our domestic things. We saw Russia, increase their wheat output 2 million metric tons, Turkey 1.5 million metric tons, and Ukraine 500,000 metric tons. So, I guess the story here on the wheat side is U.S. supply is tightening, but it's being overdone by increases in the global market. And then finally, just rounding out the picture here on the soybean side, the global soybean numbers weren't all that different from what we expected. However, USDA continues to shift U.S. domestic demand from the export program, which was lowered 20 million bushels here for our current marketing year, down to 1.51 billion bushels. That's the lowest in 13 years. However, we continue to set records as it relates to soybeans used for domestic crush, which, again, you'll hear a lot of people talk about switching from exports to domestic use, and that is certainly the case this year. But I think people would want to keep a stable export program as part of that as well. And so that was the big story on the soybean side.
And that would be for the June WASDE, World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report. USDA will be collecting information for the end of the month grain stocks, and more importantly, I think at this point, the acreage report as well. What kinds of things have you been discussing as it's related to those two?
Yes, and so they should be wrapped up, I think, with the survey collection, both for acreage and June 1 stocks reports, are getting pretty close to it at this point. A couple of things I'm going to look for is acreage expectations relative to the March numbers. Last year, we saw a sizable increase in the corn acreage numbers from what we saw in March and what we saw in pre-report expectations. Could we see a similar thing this year? I think it's possible. I'm not, I don't have a very strong opinion or sentiment here of where things are going. The expectation is that U.S. corn acreage comes down a little bit due to the high fertilizer prices that we saw and some of the delays in planting in certain areas of the country, especially as it relates to the southeast and even kind of the upper plains in North Dakota. I don't think we saw a huge amount of acreage shifts from what was pre-reported. So my bias is not a whole lot of changes from those March numbers. Again, that's not a strong bias, but that's kind of where I'm at. And the trade is expecting a little bit of shift from corn acreage to soybeans. Corn still more than soybeans, but shifting a few of those acres.
President has announced an end to the war in Iran. There will be some kind of signing agreement later in the week on Friday. At this point, it is scheduled. I'm wondering if that means very much to the agricultural world.
Well, so yes, our grains and oilseed industry has a connection, a tie to energy markets. I wrote a report for a local magazine a month or so ago and basically did some calculations, and we can explain about 65% of corn and soybean prices just related to the price of oil. So using that as an indicator alone gets you 65% of the way to explaining corn and soybean prices. So a strong tie, and we saw oil markets kind of sell off here on this news, kind of resetting expectations. I don't think we'll get all the way back down to where they were prior to the war or the conflict is. And big reason for that is the industry is still trying to figure out what supply disruptions do exist out there. It's going to take a while for insurance companies to feel comfortable allowing ships to transit the canal on cheaper insurance rates. So some of these costs will stick around for just a little bit, but certainly the market's selling off, and that's putting some bearish pressure on our grain and oilseed markets.
One last item on the calendar that I was thinking about, because the president did say that he was willing, and you're at the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, to not extend the USMCA agreement, which expires July 1. Probably a negotiating tactic. However, it did worry greatly many of the trade organizations and the ag organizations in particular in the United States.
Sure, yeah. So, Canada and Mexico are our top two markets for agriculture trade. Part of the reason for that is just geographical proximity. There's several products that we do get from Canada, namely potash, that are really important to our agriculture industry. And we also ship them a lot of corn-based ethanol and, to some extent, bio-based diesel products. And so that's a major market for those products. And the meat industries of all three countries are very intertwined. Mexico is a major market for U.S. pork. Poultry is a growing industry across all three countries as well. And so, the economies of all three, especially from an ag trade standpoint, are pretty intertwined at this moment. So, the big concern was if we did truly move away from it, there would be some challenges and potentially even market shifts and market price movements that would happen as a result of that, just because of how intertwined we've become in the three countries as it relates to ag products.
Thank you much, Ben. Ben Brown is an agricultural economist at the University of Missouri and with the Extension and FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Let's take a look at the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Mark Russo is here. He is with Everstream Analytics. Mark, could you first for me recap what last week looked like in the Corn Belt? A lot of wind and damage and a whole lot of rainfall in our area, but that was a big storm. And it was one of a series. Can you tell me how much of the Corn Belt actually picked up rainfall and if there's any place that's still in deficit?
Sure, Todd. Yeah, with last week's very stormy weather, especially Wednesday and Thursday, those were the 2 days with the most significant storm activity, whether it's from heavy rainfall and flooding to tornadoes, large hail and severe wind gusts. So last Wednesday and Thursday, especially for even though it is June and we typically see severe weather, the extent of severe weather, the magnitude and kind of the more kind of spatial extent of the heavy rainfall, it was pretty impressive. And now the question becomes, I guess before getting into the forecast, one other thing to note here is that some of the rainfall totals that did occur, especially across the central and northern areas of Illinois, ranged anywhere from 2 to 3 inches on the lower side to 5, 6, 7 inches on the higher side of things. And so if we look at the entire Corn Belt now, given last week's rains, the only areas right now that have a little bit of a deficit, but nothing concerning, is up across the far northern Midwest in around areas of the Red River Valley, like western Minnesota and the eastern Dakotas.
It appears more rainfall is in the offing this week. Where will it come, and will we have severe weather with it too?
Yeah, we are going to see another round of severe weather and widespread shower and thunderstorm activity, some of which could, again, produce some heavy rainfall. The timing of note here is really on Wednesday. That's the day when a very strong system will be crossing the Corn Belt here, and it does look to produce a swath of severe weather and heavy rainfall from Iowa and northern Missouri across here into Illinois and Indiana. It does have some similarities as the setup for the severe weather outbreak last Thursday. The good piece of news, though, is that once we get past Wednesday, then it does look like the pattern turns less active here for multiple days here. So drier weather, again, some cooler air working its way back in. And at least beyond next Wednesday, it look, or this upcoming Wednesday, it looks relatively quiet with any other severe weather risk looking out into next week.
Before I let you go, we should check in on Western Europe. They have had some difficulty with dry weather and very warm weather, too. What are conditions like there this week?
Well, Todd, Europe, especially Western Europe, is getting back into another significant heat wave. Temperatures are heating up right now as this strong ridge of high pressure builds into Western Europe and will be expanding eastward into southeastern Europe here coming up over the upcoming weekend and next week. So this does look to be a prolonged heat wave. And also with this will be below normal rainfall. And right now, our biggest concern is in Europe is France and some of the surrounding areas there, like in Italy and northern Spain, as that's where the most significant heat and longest duration dryness will be from now through the end of the month and even into the start of July as well.
If you could go back and just take up the early spring or the early and late spring and then the early summer there, were they very dry in that hot process too?
Well, it's interesting, Todd. The driest area back earlier in the spring, you go back like a month to 6 weeks ago, and it was actually Eastern Europe in countries such as Romania, Bulgaria, and even into Germany. But then as you moved west into a country like France, they weren't that dry. Now, in late May, there was the historic heat wave, and that started the process of lowering soil moisture in countries like France. And now, and then as France started to dry out, then a little bit of improvement in areas further to the east. So based on everything right now, that's why our concern is more so focused on France and Western Europe in general, because that's where temperatures will be the hottest. Soil moisture will be declining the most and due to the dry conditions from now through early July.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Online, on demand at WILLAG.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.